BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Finally, for this hour, we carry on with the book Vincent van Gogh, The Letters. In today's episode, he's beginning a new life in the south of France. Vincent is played by Mark Rylance, and his younger brother, Tayo, is played by Joseph Cohen Cole.
Tayo van Gogh to Wilhelmine van Gogh, Paris, 24th and 26th of February, 1888. Dear Will, for a long time I've been wanting to write to you again, and I'm doing so now to tell you that Vincent left for the south last Sunday, first to Arles, then probably Marseille. The new school of painters tries above all to get light and sun into paintings, and you can well understand that the grey days lately have supplied little material for subjects. Moreover, the cold was making Vincent ill, and he felt a definite need for rather milder air. When he came here 2 years ago, I never thought that we'd become so attached to each other. It was through him that I came into contact with many painters who regarded him very highly. He has such a big heart that he's always looking to do something for others. Unfortunately, for those who cannot or will not understand him. He has arrived in Arles and found 50 centimetres of snow there, which isn't exactly what he'd been expecting. But he writes that he has made 3 studies all the same, and he goes on to say, "At times it seems to me that my blood is more or less ready to start circulating again. Bid Ma good day from me. Warm regards, and believe me, your loving Tayo."
Arles, 2nd of March, 1888. "My dear Tayo, I was very pleased to receive your letter and the 50-franc note. I've had a letter here from Gauguin, who says he's been ill in bed for a fortnight, that he's broke, that he'd like to know if you'd sold anything for him, but that he can't write to you for fear of bothering you, that he's under so much pressure to earn a little money, he'd reduce the price of his paintings still further. Would you risk buying the seascape from him for the firm? There's a hard frost here, and out in the country there's still snow. I have a study of a whitened landscape with the town in the background, and then 2 little studies of a branch of an almond tree that's already in flower, despite everything. With a handshake to you, and to any pals you may meet, yours truly, Vincent." Arles, 16th of March, 1888. "My dear Tayo, I thank you very much for your letter. As far as work goes, I brought home a number 15 canvas today. It's a drawbridge with a little carriage going across it, outlined against a blue sky, the river blue as well, the banks orange with greenery, a group of washerwomen wearing blouses and multicoloured bonnets, and another landscape with a little rustic bridge and washerwomen as well. 12 studies altogether since I've been here. The weather's changeable, often windy and cloudy skies, but the almond trees are starting to blossom everywhere. But, my dear brother, you know, I've seen nothing yet in its usual splendour. That's why, even while being worried that at the moment expenses are steep and the paintings of no value, that's why I don't despair of success in this enterprise of going south. Here I'm seeing new things. I'm learning. For many reasons, I'd like to be able to create a pied-à-terre which could be used to provide a rest in the country for yourself and for several of our friends, the poor impressionists. I made my last 3 studies with the help of the perspective frame. The modern use of this tool may differ from the use people made of it in the past, but isn't it also true that with the process of painting in oils, we nowadays achieve very different effects? I believe in the absolute necessity of a new art of colour, of drawing, and of the artistic life. More soon. Ever yours, Vincent." Arles, 1st of May, 1888. "My dear Tayo, thank you very much for your letter and the 50-franc note it contained. Last week I suffered from a toothache that was so agonizing that it made me waste time quite in spite of myself. Nevertheless, I've just sent you a roll of small pen drawings, 12, I think. Ah, well, today I rented the right-hand wing of this building, which contains 4 rooms, or more precisely 2, with 2 little rooms. It's painted yellow outside, whitewashed inside, in the full sunshine. I've rented it for 15 francs a month. At last, I'll see my canvases in a really bright interior. The floor's made of red bricks, and outside the public garden, of which you'll find two more drawings. If necessary, I could live at the new studio with someone else. Perhaps Gauguin will come to the south. I'm very pleased that you found our mother and sister well. I shake your hand firmly, wishing you a year as full of sunshine as the weather here today. Ever yours, Vincent. Arles, 28th or 29th of May, 1888. My dear Theo, I thought of Gauguin, and here we are. And the two of us will live on the same money as I spend on myself alone. Well, it's in response to your wish to help him out, so herewith, rough draft of a letter to Gauguin. My dear old Gauguin, wanted to write now to tell you I've just rented a four-room house here in Arles, and that it seems to me that if I find another painter who feels like getting the most out of the South, and who, like me, was sufficiently absorbed in his work to be able to resign himself to living like a monk who'd go to the brothel once a fortnight, then the thing would be good. My brother can't send money to you in Brittany and at the same time send money to me in Provence. But would you like to share with me here? There's plenty more I could tell you, but here we are, business first. Reply to both of us soon. To Wilhelmine Van Gogh, Arles, between the 16th and 20th of June, 1888. My dear sister, many thanks for your letter. I daren't give way to my desire to write to you too often. All this correspondence doesn't always help to keep us, who are of a nervous disposition, strong in cases of possible immersions in melancholy, which I have every now and then. We are now living here in a world of painting where it's unspeakably paralyzed and wretched. There are 20 or so painters here right now, all having more debts than money. People have heard of the Impressionists. They have great expectations of them, but when they see them for the first time, they're bitterly, bitterly disappointed and find them careless, ugly and badly painted, bad in colour, everything that's miserable. But in one day, all those 20 whom I mentioned paint everything they set eyes on, and better than many a great man who has a big reputation in the art world. And in my own technique, I have the same ideas concerning colour. Cornflowers with white chrysanthemums and a few marigolds. There you have a motif in blue and orange. Heliotrope and yellow roses, motif in lilac and yellow. Poppies or red geraniums in bold green leaves, motif in red and green. There you have basics, but enough to show you, without a painting, that there are colours that make each other shine, that complete each other, like man and wife. However, I'm writing to you much too much about painting. Embracing you and Ma in thought. Your loving, Vincent.
Paul Gauguin to Vincent van Gogh, Pont-Aven, 22nd of July, 1888. My dear Vincent, I would very much like it if we were to achieve our aims. That is, my coming to Provence. If it weren't for this damned money, my bags would soon be packed. Until we're together, an affectionate handshake, Paul Gauguin.
Arles, 21st or 22nd of August, 1888. My dear Theo, I'm writing to you in haste. I'm painting with the gusto of a Marseillais eating bouillabaisse. Which won't surprise you when it's a question of painting large sunflowers. I have three canvases on the go, three large flowers in a green vase, light background, number 15 canvas. Three flowers, one flower that's gone to seed, and a bud on a royal blue background, number 25 canvas. 12 flowers and buds in a yellow vase, number 30 canvas. In the hope of living with Gauguin, I'd like to do a decoration for the studio. Nothing but large sunflowers. Today I saw that same coal boat again with workers unloading it that I've already told you about. It would be a grand subject. Only I'm beginning more and more to look for a simple technique that perhaps isn't impressionist. I'd like to paint in such a way that, if it comes to it, everyone who has eyes could understand it. Handshake, I must get back to work. Ever yours? Vincent. Arles, 9th of September, 1888. My dear Theo, I've just put the croquis of the new painting, The Night Café, in the post. In my painting, I've tried to express the idea that the café is a place where you can ruin yourself, go mad, commit crimes. Anyway, I tried with contrasts of delicate pink and blood red and wine red, soft Louis XV and Veronese green, contrasting with yellow greens and hard blue greens. All of that in an ambiance of a hellish furnace in pale sulphur. To express something of the power of the dark corners of a grog shop, and yet with the appearance of Japanese gaiety and Tartarin's good nature. But what would Mr. Terstech say about this painting? He who, looking at a Sisley, the most tactful and sensitive of the Impressionists, had already said, I can't stop myself thinking that the artist who painted that was a little tipsy. Looking at my painting, then, he'd say that it's a full-blown case of delirium tremens. Arles, 9th and 14th of September, 1888. My dear sister, your letter gave me great pleasure. So your visit to Paris was a great success. I would really like it if you were to come here too next year. At the moment, I'm furnishing the studio. There are two small rooms upstairs, and I'll arrange one of these for putting up a friend, and the other one for me. I want nothing there but straw-bottomed chairs and a table and a deal bed. I've just finished a canvas of a cafe interior at night, lit by lamps. The room is painted red, and inside, in the gaslight, the green billiard table, which casts an immense shadow over the floor. I want to paint a starry sky now. It seems to me that the night is even more richly coloured than the day, coloured in the most intense violets, blues, and greens. If you look carefully, you'll see that some stars are lemony. Others have a pink, green, forget-me-not blue glow. And without labouring the point, it's clear that to paint a starry sky, it's not nearly enough to put white spots on blue-black. My house here is painted outside in the yellow of fresh butter, with garish green shutters. And it's in the full sun on the square, where there's a green garden of plane trees, oleanders, acacias. And inside it's all whitewashed, and the floors of red bricks. And the intense blue sky above. Inside I can live and breathe, and think, and paint. I'm in really much better health here than in Paris. It's the sun that has never sufficiently penetrated us northerners. My dear sister, I believe that at present we must paint nature's rich and magnificent aspects. We need good cheer and happiness, hope and love. The uglier, older, meaner, iller, poorer I get, the more I wish to take my revenge by doing brilliant colour, well-arranged, resplendent. I kiss you affectionately, and mother too. Ever yours, Vincent.
Tomorrow, Gauguin joins Vincent in That Little Yellow House. In the third part of Vincent van Gogh, The Letters, you heard Mark Rylance, Joseph Cohen Cole, and Julius de Silva as Gauguin. It was abridged by Doreen Estel and produced by Emma Harding.
I'm Lynn Truss, and in 4 Extra Celebrates Dora Bryan, I'll be looking back on the life and career of one of Britain's great all-round performers. She became a household name playing a tart with a heart in films such as A Taste of Honey and later on TV in Last of the Summer Wine. But as we'll hear in this 3-hour special, in which we sit back and enjoy some highlights from Dora's radio archive, there was much more to her than that. Joining me in the studio are the actor Bernard Cribbins, film writer Matthew Sweet, Dora's longtime drama producer Martin Jenkins, and theatre critic Benedict Nightingale. You can hear 4 Extra Celebrates Dora Bryan at 9 in the morning and 7 in the evening this Saturday.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
3 o'clock, Wes Butters with drama next, and then another short story from Alison Moore's collection, The Pre-War House and Other Stories. And at 10 tonight, the doors open up to our comedy club, beginning with a new series, Thanks a Lot, Milton Jones, which sees the star of Mock the Week return as a Good Samaritan, popping up to help people in need, even if that's the last thing they need. And that's at 10. Now, we've a three-part drama for the rest of this week, and a story that's been continuously in print since the mid-1800s.
Written by R.D. Blackmore and adapted in 3 episodes for radio by Barry Letts, we present the most popular and enduring of romances, Lorna Doone, starring David Schofield as John Ridd and Alison Pettit as Lorna Doone. Episode 1.
If anybody cares to hear a simple tale told simply, I, John Ridd, of the parish of Orr in the county of Somerset, I will try to tell it in order. Though it must be said that in this, the reign of our good Queen Anne, I find it hard to credit my own memory that for so many years we bore the evil deeds of that devil's tribe, the Doones of Bagworthy, or Badgery, as the people call it. It was on my 12th birthday, the 29th of November, 1673. That John Fry came to pull me from my school desk, and with hardly time for me to pack my bag, hustle me onto my pony and away.
But what's the use in coming now, John? Leading poor Peggy over the moors too. It's so cruel cold for her. The holidays don't begin till Wednesday fortnight. And to think of you not knowing that.
Oh, us knows that well enough, Master John. Without go to grammar school like you.
And Father. His father. He always used to come for me and leave no one else to do it.
Best save your breath now. We've a long day's ride across the moor. You keep your eyes skinned for the old ash, boy.
What? What's that? John? John? What's that noise?
Mercy of God. Where be us now? Seen the old ash, have he?
No, not... Oh. I can see what it is now. It's a gibbet. Have they hanged one of the Doones then, John?
Nay. That be Red Jem Annerford. And good sister.